Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 9:03 a.m. Please silence all cell phones. Present today is Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Wilkowski, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman, myself, Senator Bishop, and Senator Von Imhoff is excused, and Senator Olson is excused. Could call in. Senator Olson?
Yes, I'm online.
Oh, good. We got Senator Olson's online. Very good. Today's agenda, SB 45, age for nicotine e-cigarettes and tax for e-cigarettes, and SB 164. We will take an at-ease after committee action on Senate Bill 45 as we change out the presentation. Give people time to move around. So this is a SB 45 is front and center, age for nicotine e-cigarettes and tax on e-cigarettes. This is a second hearing for Senate Bill 45. We have opened and closed public testimony. Our intention is to consider a committee substitute in one amendment. We have a CS for introduction. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Finance Committee adopt a committee substitute for Senate Bill 45, Finance 32LS0311/D, before the committee as our working document.
Thank you, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Shine, would you please come before the committee and walk us through the CS?
Gladly. For the record, Aaron Shine, staff to Co-Chair Bishop and to the Senate Finance Committee. Mr. Chairman, broadly, I think the items, I'll go through an explanation of changes between the versions, but broadly, as an introduction, I'd like to highlight that the CS version D before the committee for consideration removes the mandatory product manufacturer liability insurance policy requirement. It removes a prohibition on flavored electronic smoking products. And it bifurcates the excise tax rate between tobacco products, which stays at 75% of wholesale, and then includes an electronic smoking product, which includes closed systems electronic smoking products, which is now a tax rate, an excise tax rate of 45%. I'm going to go through the bill. Starting on page 3, line 21 in section 3, this amends AS 1176-105C to reduce the existing violation of $500 to be not more than $300 for possession of tobacco, an electronic smoking product, or product containing nicotine by a person under 21 years of age. The next change can be found in Section 4, which is also on page 3, lines 22 through 24. This adds a new subsection, AS 1176-105D, that directs the court system to treat violations for possession of tobacco and electronic smoking products similar to traffic violations, with a maximum fine of $300, and to waive mandatory court appearance. This replaces Section 4 from the previous version, Version O, relating to the prohibition of internet sales, as that is now addressed in Section 11 and 19 of this version, and allows internet sales, but with a third-party age verification. The next change you can find on Section 10, which is page 5, lines 25 through 28. This section pertains to mandatory product manufacturer liability insurance policy, and it was struck from this version, and now instead replaces it with a new Section 10 by adding a new subsection, AS 1181-900B69, that provides a definition of nicotine. In Section 14 is the next page. Is the next section. It's on page 7, lines 3 through 14. This amends AS 4350-300 by establishing an excise tax rate of 45 for the wholesale price of the e-liquid contained in an electronic smoking product. Next change is in section 15. This is page 7, lines 23 through 26, and it amends AS 4350-300 by adding a new subsection C that provides a definition of closed system electronic smoking product. The next section is section 16. And the changes can be found on page 8, line 9 through 13, and it amends AS 4350310B to exclude marijuana products from any provision of the bill. The next section is section 16. That's on page 8, line 20 through 24. And this amends AS 4350320 to delete the prohibition of flavored electronic smoking products and adds a prohibition of marketing electronic smoking products, including a flavored product, in a manner likely to promote the use of them by a person under the age of 21. Next section is section 27. That's on page 12, lines 28 through 31. Let me get there. This amends AS 4350390 to provide a reference to the definition of nicotine established in Section 10. It's a conforming section. The next section, Section 32, on page 16, lines 12 through 13. This amends AS 4550471B58 by conforming changes made in Section 18 relating to the unlawful marketing practices established in that section. And then in section 35 is the next change. And actually, I would note also in section 33, between the versions, there was a section of law that's already established law that was missing from the bill draft, and so that was added. You can see that on page 17, lines 11 through 12, and that's subsection 7. That's not a change to the bill, but if you compare the two versions, it was omitted as a drafting error in the previous version and is now included as existing law. So that's a technical change. On page, section 35, page 17, line 30 through page 18, line 2, this is section 35. It's a conforming change to the applicability sections, as well as providing a grandfather clause for persons 19 years of age or older who are employed on the effective date of this act by a person with a business license endorsement to sell tobacco products. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, on page 18, line 3 in section 36, it amends the effective date from January 1st, 2022 to July 1st, 2023. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I can attempt to answer any questions the committees may have.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any further objection to adopting the CS? Seeing none, the CS is adopted. Senator Stevens and Mr. Lampkin, could you join us at the table, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gary Stevens, District P. This really is a very simple bill in essence, because it's about protecting our children from becoming addicted to nicotine. We have arrived late to the party. We've been working on this legislation since 2015, so 7 years have gone by, and these products continue to evade any meaningful public policy to restrict youth access. The more time goes by, Mr. Chairman, the more Alaskans will become addicted, young Alaskans will become addicted to what is, we all must know, an unhealthy habit. The more time goes by, the more the industry will continue to market to and profit by these habits. While we seem to be giving tacit approval that these products are safe and harmless, Mr. Chairman, that is far from the truth. We all must know that. They're not safe. They're not harmless. I believe we need to act now to protect Alaska's young people. And I'd ask my aide, Tim Lampkin, to give you some very, very specific things about this, what this bill does and doesn't do.
Senator Stevens, are you, the CS that was introduced, you're fine, are you comfortable with that? Do you have any comments on the CS that was introduced?
I'm fine with the CS, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Lampkin, would you like to add anything?
For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I have nothing to add other than just to be available for questions at this time.
Okay. All right. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. The change to allow flavored e-cigarettes, or I guess flavors, do you have any concerns over that?
responds to that.
Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. So the CS reflects what could be interpreted as a compromise, where it's recognized that there are legitimate instances of adults, mind you, that have used these products to stop smoking cigarettes, and that they may yet still have a distaste for the flavor of tobacco or of menthol, which is more widely recognized at the federal level, and that they may have a legitimate reason to prefer the flavor of peach or strawberry or whatever it might be. And so the compromise was struck that you'll find in a couple for unlawful marketing practices that there's provisions allowing for that it's unlawful for a manufacturer to market products in a manner that would likely promote or prompt minors' consumption or desire to use these products. So that's what we found as a compromise.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Would this allow the sale or marketing of flavors such as Fruit Loops or Lucky Charms?
That's what would be called into question, and could cite those references in law as calling those, marketing those products as unlawful.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Wilson, did you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move amendment number one.
No, I'll object.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment 1 starts on page 7, line 3, and inserts 15% of the wholesale price. At the main point of the bill is to reduce the underage usage by bringing all laws to vape to the age of to conform with the 21 with the federal law of the age. That's great. But this goal is sort of, I think, is being saddled with a lot of penalties on top of just adding the age of 21. We heard under testimony that the FDA considers some of these products to be appropriate for the protection of public health, like in the UK. If they're actually used for smoking cessation tools, it appears that vapes can offer that potentially less harmful. We all think that they're harmful. I don't think there's any debate about that. But there are could be potentially less harmful than the combustible cigarettes. And so instead of just raising the age to 21 to less harmful, alternative should be encouraged. I just want to be clear that no one should, you know, I don't encourage smoking for anybody. I don't personally use these products, but we should offer a less lethal delivery alternative. And so again, if the intent is to lower the vape tax to 15% as a CS is proposed, instead of the proposed rate of 45%, the price points of cigarettes and vape should be about the same. There's no incentive to switch. And so that's why I just feel that the 15%, I think, was a compromise that the other body made in their finance committee, and just feel that's a little bit more appropriate to do so.
Thank you. Brief at ease. Back on the record. Any further discussion on this amendment? Senator Wilikowski.
Could I ask the bill sponsor
yep.
what their position is on this?
That was my next question. But so, Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm opposed to the amendment. Finance does what it has to do, but I don't think this is a good idea.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment? I'm going to maintain my objection. Clerk, call the roll.
No.
Senator Wilson.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
No.
Senator Olson.
No.
Senator Bishop.
No.
Senator Stanton.
No.
At ease. Back on the record, Senator Olson, could you enunciate your vote again on the amendment? The recorder couldn't hear it.
No, N-O, no.
Thank you.
185 nays.
Okay. One yea, five nays. The amendment number one has failed. Any further committee discussion? We're going to take just a brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record. We're going to get updated fiscal notes, and we're going to set the bill aside, and we'll bring it back up at such time when we have those fiscal notes. So we're going to take an at ease and switch out presenters and get ready for SB 164 capital budget. morning. We're back on the record, and I need to get on the right page. Senate Bill 164, Capital Budget. Our intention is to consider committee substitute, set an amendment deadline, and set the bill aside. We have a CS for introduction. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 164, Work Order 32-GS2436/B, as our working document.
Thank you, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. And good morning, Mr. Grusendorf, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Cody Grusendorf. I'm staff to the Senate Finance Committee and Senator Bishop. I will walk you through the explanation of changes for the CS before you. First, I wanted to highlight the documents that are in your packet. There are three legislative finance reports labeled A, B, and C. The first report, document A, is a report that shows the each project proposed by the governor and the structure of funding. So in column one, you will find governor's fiscal year 22 supplementally funded projects. In column two is the governor's fiscal year 23 projects. Column three is a total of those two, so the governor's total. Column four is the Senate CS fiscal year 22 supplementally funded projects. Column five is fiscal year 23 in the Senate CS. And column six is the Senate CS total. Column seven is a comparison between the governor and the Senate CS totals. So if you see a number in this column, you will know that there was a change, either a decrease or a removal of funding. Document B is the same structure for the columns. This document highlights or shows the agency spend by unrestricted general fund. And document C is the same, except for it shows total fund sources. So if we're comfortable with the reports, I will move into the explanation of changes, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
So the CS version B before you, when considering this, the committee looked at the entire universe of projects proposed by the governor, including the two supplemental bills. And the objective of this CS was to find a baseline starting point for the committee's consideration during the budget process. With that being said, in this CS, you will find no new legislative add. You will find no increase in funding to any of the governor's proposed projects. There are no legislative reappropriations, and we did not include any of the proposed general obligation bond projects. The CS version B removes all of the mental health budget items. These will be addressed in the mental health budget. The total for these items was about $14 million. The CS also removes the following fund sources. We have removed all of the Coronavirus Capital Project Fund projects. This was a $64 million total. We have also removed all of SLRF, which is the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds. You will find none of that fund source in this budget. That was $72 million proposed by the governor. Another structure change was the governor proposed about $90.7 million of fiscal year 22 supplemental. This CS before you proposes $3.1 million of supplemental. And that brings me to the total spend. So the governor, total UGF spend, the governor's budget, including supplemental, spends about $249.1 million of UGF. The CS before you proposes to spend $197.4 million UGF. This is a reduction of $51.7 million. It's worth noting that that number does not include the $14 million of mental health capital projects, and it does not include the proposed roughly $75 million of the IJA, the federal infrastructure bill spending in Senate Bill 241. It's just worth noting that for the record that the capital budget will include potentially those projects as well. Now we'll move into the projects that are included in the fiscal year 22 supplemental section of the bill. The first project is a Alaska Energy Authority electric vehicle infrastructure plan. This is a $1.5 million request so the state can develop a plan so we can access potential infrastructure funds that were passed by the federal Congress. The second project is in the Department of Corrections. It's a suicide prevention barrier for $750,000. In the Department of Health, there is the Office of Children's Services lease expansion or relocation project. Their lease is expiring, and they need funds supplementally to be able to find a new lease. Department of Natural Resources National Historic Preservation Fund, $200,000 UGF. This is supplemental so that they can match some Fed funds in the previous fiscal year, or in the current fiscal year. There are also two projects that are non-UGF funded in the supplemental. The first is a grant to the Prince William Sound Science Center for facilities replacement and associated debt. This is a EVOS, the Exxon Valdez oil spill. This is a trustee project. And the second one is in the Office of the Governor. This is $1.25 million election fund authority so that they can do the program under the Help America Vote Act. That's a federal piece of legislation. I'm now going to touch on the projects that were funded by the governor using SLRF that we have moved to UGF in fiscal year 23. The first is a grant to the Alaska Travel Industry Association for $5 million UGF. The second is in the Department of Health, the Division of Public Assistance. This is an e-forms and online noticing project. It's $4 million UGF, and this matches $4 million of federal authority. In the Department of Health, Division of Public Assistance, again, they have an eligibility system replacement project. They have $18.8 million of federal funds that they need $4.7 million of UGF to match. In DNR, Department of Natural Resources, Statewide Park Sanitation Deferred Maintenance and Upgrades, $1.418 million UGF. There were two projects that the CS reduces funding in. The first is the Alaska Energy Authority Strategic Plan for Railbelt Assets. The original request was for $2.5 million. The CS before you reduces that funding to $1.5 million. The second reduction was in the Department of Public Safety, their mobile and handheld radio replacement project. The original request was for $3.728 million, and the CS before you reduces that funding to $1 million. The next group of projects are governor's proposed projects that the CS removes completely. The first project is in the Department of Administration. It's an adoption to cloud migration for $23.1 million UGF. The second is a grant to the Voice of the Arctic for $1 million. The CS removes that project. In the Department of Fish and Game, an Arctic fisheries study for $1 million and $2 million federal authority to match that UGF. The CS removes that. A Cook Inlet Petroleum Potential Study, $1.2 million UGF is removed. In the Department of Education, the Napakiak School, $22.1 million UGF and $32.7 million REAA authority has been removed. In the Department of Health, an IT security program assessment for $1.9 million UGF has been removed. The next three projects are the Coronavirus Capital Project Fund projects. In discussions with OMB, it is our understanding that Treasury is unlikely to accept the grants for these projects. Therefore, we are removing them, and we'll be in discussions with OMB on how to put the state's plan forward on what projects to include in that plan for this money. And the bottom three projects are the SLRF-funded projects that we have not moved over to UGF in the current year budget. The first is the City of Palmer Wastewater Treatment Plant for $6.9 million. The next is an Alaska Mariculture Alliance grant program for $25 million. And we have removed $25 million grants for Food Security Agriculture Incentive Grant Program.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you expound on the status of the Napakiak School construction?
Certainly, Senator. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. It's my understanding that schools in the RAA program are funded through the school construction grant list. Via the REA statute, and that is how the committee intends to fund the Napakiak School.
And that is fully funded at the governor's request, the amount?
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilson and Senator Studman.
Hey, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get a better understanding. So the $136 million that's being removed from the coronavirus funding, both the SLRF and the CCPF, what's the intention of that funding? Is it to be used at a later time and date, or just?
Senator Wilson, through the chair. So for the coronavirus capital project funds, the $64 million, that's actually, I believe it was authorized in ARPA. It's $112 million, and it was originally intended for broadband, but the federal guidance came out that it opened up eligibility for other certain criteria, and it's pretty stringent. So as of now, there are no projects in the budget for accessing that money, and we would need to put a plan together for if we want to access that $112 million.
I guess as a follow-up, do we know the deadline of that, and is that part of the amendment process that you're looking for, either the administration or for committee members to find to fill that $112 million?
I think that amendment deadline was for the 111 was September of this year, and I'm looking at Mr. Steininger, and he's nodding yes. And your second part of your question?
Part
of the amendment deadline is yes.
So can we, I guess, get the criteria for that so we know how to utilize those funds?
It's our understanding that the criteria for that is pretty much as the Secretary of Treasury alluded to when it was introduced a year ago under ARPA, is for broadband projects.
Cody. Mr. Chairman, I have the guidance for the coronavirus capital project funds, and I can certainly forward it on to you, but the criteria for Treasury to accept that grant would be, it must meet all of the following criteria. Number one, the project must be designed to directly enable work, education, and health monitoring, so all three of those. Number two, the project must address a critical need that resulted from or was made apparent or exacerbated by the COVID-19 public health emergency. Number three, it must address a critical need of the community to be served by it. So it must meet all of that criteria to be accepted by Treasury. And I can forward this on to your office.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of base comments. You know, this is early in the process, and we'll be balancing out fund sources as we go along. And one of the items is for those watching at home, is a concern with the Pacific School. The intent here is to get this school funded this year. There's no question about that whatsoever. But when we're dealing with the REA area, we're trying to take a look at the school bond debt reimbursement and the REAA funding that is linked to it. And we want to take that into a balanced approach when we look at possibly picking up some of the arrears on that. And then we'll have discussions on the mechanics of getting the school fully funded. So just to reinforce Senator Hoffman's a question into the public, do not conclude that the school is being removed out of the process, because it's not. What we're doing here is taking a look at the fund sources and how we're going to fund it. But it's going to get the full intent, I think, of this committee is to fund that school.
And fund it by the statute, as I've been educated by the two co-chairs and former co-chairs. Mm-hmm. It will be funded. Thank you. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The previous speaker, the co-chair, stated that the intent was not to have so many appropriation bills floating around. Is the intent then to combine sort of supplemental capital projects and that newly infrastructure capital bill all into one singular capital project?
That's the pathway we're going down, just to have one capital budget. Yes.
And if I could?
Yes.
So the intent would be to look for amendments that would cover all three?
Well, right now we just got one.
Okay.
With a little bit of supplemental in 22. But Senator Stedman?
Just, you know, for those watching at home, again, this is just the beginning of the baseline, not much different than how we are approaching the operating budget, where we did a baseline budget. So when we add or make alterations, it's clear to the public what we're doing and where. And then for those, again, for just added information, generally speaking, the legislature does not have multiple appropriation bills flying around the room. They have a tendency of getting out of control. So there's always a consolidation of appropriation bills to minimize those numbers in both bodies. And we'll the full intent is to continue to do that. But that's one reason why you see these columns broken out the way they are today, so it's clear where the different projects, where they appeared from. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Any further discussion? There's no further discussion. I'll remove my objection to adopting the CS. Any further discussion before we set this bill aside? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Grusendorf, and we'll set SB 164 aside for today. And we do have an amendment deadline, and that will be Thursday, April 14th at 5 p.m. Okay. And we're going to take one brief at ease. Don't go. Okay, we're back on the record. This afternoon's meeting is at 1 p.m. On the agenda is SB 111, Early Education Reading Intervention, and we are removing SB 236, Facilities Construction and Schools. So with that, we are adjourned at 9:40.